Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's May 2024, and you're listening to episode 393, which is a conversation about science and religion. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Douglas Groteis. He is the author of Christian Apologetics, Second Edition, and most recently, Beyond the Wager, The Christian Brilliance of Blaise Pascal. Today's conversation with Doug is part of an ongoing series called Back to Basics Apologetics, where we take common apologetics questions and we have our contributing writers answer them. And this article is not only part of the Back to Basics Apologetics series, it is also an installment in Doug's regular ongoing column, which is bi-monthly, called Culture Critique. Now, he has written an in-depth feature article for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called Refuting the View, Religion is a Myth, but Science is the Truth. And you can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. Doug, it's great to have you on the podcast again.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be back.
Well, this is another article in our ongoing series, Back to Basics, just some of those classic apologetics questions that we get or objections that people have to Christianity. And at the end of the podcast, I'm going to ask Doug some questions based on comments we just got on our YouTube channel, posting a video on this very topic this past weekend. So this is still very much an objection that people use, and some of them to mock Christians as well. But we want to get into this. So again, this is one of our back to basics apologetics objections. And that's, you know, really what people say is, hey, it's science matters. Religion can't be proven. Science is truth. And religion is just a bunch of made up fairy tales. So why do people say that science and faith, and in Christianity in particular, conflict?
Well, I think a lot of it is a perception that people have by experts who make pronouncements about science and religion beyond their competence. So I think of someone like Richard Dawkins, who was really leading the charge of the New Atheists about 15 years ago. And he's still out there. He's recently said that he was a cultural Christian. He likes certain aspects of Christianity, but he certainly is still an atheist and doesn't want people to really be Christians. But the story that's told by people like Richard Dawkins is that science has displaced religion, that religion is based on mere fiction or wish fulfillment. It's based on an outdated pre-scientific worldview. And now we have a worldview given to us by chemistry, biology, and physics that has cleaned out the universe of anything supernatural or anything magical. So people will often appeal to Charles Darwin and Darwinian evolution to say that there's no place now for design or purpose in nature. That's one of the key places that they go. And it's a long story to challenge that, but I certainly have done that in my book, Christian Apologetics. The whole intelligent design movement has actually shown that biology gives us many examples of design. Darwin, in fact, didn't know that much about what was going on in the cell. And once we peek into the cell with high-powered microscopes, we find molecular machines like the bacterial flagellum, and we find the informational nature of DNA and RNA. And these sorts of things really cannot be explained with a naturalistic, materialistic worldview. If you say that these contingencies were brought together by a mind because they're so antecedently improbable, then we have a good explanation for these things. But Darwinism, despite its evidential deficiencies, which many people have explained, I've done this in Christian apologetics, and Bill Dembski's worked on this, Mike Behe, Stephen Meyer. Despite all of its deficiencies, it still commands people's attention. I'll give you an example. A number of years ago, I gave a lecture on the deniable Darwin, and I just raised one pretty major objection to Darwinism. And when the question and answer time came, there were several people who were obviously upset that I would even dare challenge Darwin on anything. And this was based on the evidence of nature. It was not based on scripture per se. And they would not even necessarily address the objection that I made. The objection was that the bacterial flagellum is really a very sophisticated motor, and that undirected natural causes cannot explain its existence. And the first couple of questioners were obviously very upset that anyone would dare challenge Darwinism, especially if that person was not a scientist. But I am something of a philosopher of science, and I gave an argument, and there are lots of other arguments. So the short answer is there's a big, you might say, public relations problem, that the idea is that religion has just been swept aside by the conquests of science. There's really no room in nature anymore for design, for purpose, and everything has been explained by a materialistic worldview. And that's simply not the case. I just gave one example there from biology, but we can also talk about the fine-tuning of the universe, the origin of the universe. These really point to a supernatural God.
Well, those materialists who would say that in a war between science and religion, science will always win because it has empirical evidence, and that was discovered by scientific methods, and it's really a valid way to understand this world versus, you know, religious scriptures that can't be trusted.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I would say nothing against science as a discipline. But one of the problems here is a philosophy of science called scientism, which says that only science gives us knowledge. And by knowledge, we mean something like justified true belief. So unless science can tell us something through its empirical methods and testing, we can't have knowledge at all. And that's just a false philosophy because it's self-refuting. There's nothing in science itself that tells us that science is the only way to know anything. There's no experiment, there's no a priori principle that says science is the only way to know anything. We know a lot of things in other ways. For example, rational intuition. We know the basic laws of logic internally or intuitively. We don't go to nature to justify the proposition A cannot equal non-A, something like that, the law of non-contradiction. And then also we have moral knowledge, that it's always wrong to torture the innocent. We don't know that from any experiment in physics, chemistry, biology, or any of the soft sciences, so to speak, of psychology and sociology. We know that through rational intuition. So scientism is wrong. We have to get that out of the way, which is not an argument against science properly understood. But people have this idea that because science appeals to empirical evidence, that it will always trump any kind of religious explanation of the world. And the issue there is that there's a lot of empirical evidence for the existence of God. So when people say science always wins, what they mean is it always refutes religion, all religions, and that would include Christianity. Now, I think science does actually refute some religions. For example, the evidence for the Big Bang, or the standard model in cosmology, says that the universe began to exist out of nothing a finite time ago, about 14 billion years ago. And we add a philosophical premise there that something doesn't come from nothing. then you have to have a cause outside of the universe to account for the existence of the universe. And this is starting to sound an awful lot like, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. However, there are religions such as Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism that believe the universe is eternal. So if the Big Bang cosmology is well established as a scientific theory, and that gives us the beginning of the universe and a creation out of nothing, then that would count against any worldview, religious or non-religious, that denies the origin of the universe. So to sum up, scientism is a false philosophy. We want to get rid of that. But there's also scientific evidence for example, the creation of the world. And that really corresponds with the claims. It helps verify the claims of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, because they're all monotheistic religions that believe the world began to exist a finite time ago. But those deliverances of science would refute Hinduism and Buddhism at the point of denying the eternality of the universe. And also you've got these stories about how the church has always opposed science, and people bring Galileo to bear on that. And that's just bad history. In fact, Steve Meyer, in his book Return of the God Hypothesis, has a section on the rise of theistic science. And the scientific revolution in the West in the 17th and 18th centuries, especially on into the 19th century to some extent, was fueled by Christians who believed the world was knowable, it was orderly, it was made up of contingencies that needed to be explored and explained. So if you're talking about the development of Western science, I'm thinking especially of Sir Isaac Newton and Kepler and others, you're talking about Christians who believe that God created and designed the universe, who made it intelligible, and that it's good, it's worth studying. So we have to really credit this religious worldview for the origin of modern Western science. So in a sense, science wins when it is conducted by Christians who have a worldview that makes science meaningful. But the idea that a materialistic account of science, something given by Carl Sagan or Richard Dawkins, always trumps a theistic worldview is certainly not just not the case.
We hope you've been enjoying the new setup of the Christian Research Journal, because it's completely without a subscription, totally free online, no paywall at all at our website, equip.org. But we would like you to consider partnering with us to continue to bring you all these free articles, a new one every single week, and also the podcast. So if you'd like to partner with us, the best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. If you click on Journal, then click on Postmodern Realities Podcast. At any one of the landing pages for the podcast, you will find a link where you can partner with us by giving us a tip. So if you could please consider giving us something like $3, $5, $10, that helps us to bring you this great content, which is completely free, a new article every week, and a corresponding podcast discussion. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to our new podcast called Christian Research Journal Reads. We take some of the most popular articles that we've done, the ones that are most frequently accessed on our website, and give you an audio version for those. They would be great for your commute or as you work out to listen to the full audio articles. And we would invite you to subscribe to that podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now back to my conversation with Dr. Douglas Grotius. We're talking about science and religion, and in particular, refuting the view that religion is a myth, but science is the truth. And this article is not only part of his culture critique column, but also part of our ongoing series of Back to Basics Apologetics. Well, before we go any further, I want to just define terms, because when people are engaging with other atheists or agnostics who would give them this argument against religion, I like to define terms. So first of all, when we talk about science, what is science? What do you mean by that when we say science?
Yes, I think science is the empirical study of the natural world. It's trying to account for natural processes and objects in the world. Now, some people say, well, science can only admit naturalistic explanations for the natural world. But that's to use something called methodological naturalism, which just begs the question in favor of naturalism and against the idea that nature could provide any evidence for something outside of nature, for supernature. So I think it's best to leave it open and say that science, whether you're talking about chemistry, biology, physics, or a soft science, psychology, sociology, tries to give the best account of what's going on in the natural world. And we could further divide science into what you might call operation science, or regularly reoccurring patterns in science, like chemical reactions, and then something called origin science, which is more forensic. So the origin of the universe, of course, only happened once. It's not a regularly occurring pattern. The origin of life on Earth only happened once. That's not a regularly occurring pattern. So that's what's called origin science. And in those terms, with respect to the origin of the universe and the origin of life, the evidence and the argumentation just does not support a naturalistic worldview. Steve Meyer has done tremendous work on the origin of life issue in his book, Signature in the Cell, and also his most recent book, Return of a God Hypothesis. And there is no good naturalistic explanation on offer to explain even what would have been the most primitive single-celled organism on life. It's far too complex. It has to contain information, and you can't generate it, even with a huge amount of time and natural law and chance. You really need to have a mind behind it. So if you define science as naturalistic explanations for natural phenomena, then you cannot even allow the possibility of a design outside of nature to account for anything in nature. And I take that to be fallacious. It's just begging the question. Let's leave it open. Let's say, what is the best explanation for a phenomena? Is it a phenomenon? Is it a design explanation or a naturalistic explanation? So you don't want to just define a possible answer out of existence by the way you set up the question. And that's what methodological naturalism does. And also, it's very related to what I mentioned earlier about scientism, that science is the only way to have knowledge. Both of those claims are just false.
And then let's talk a little bit about religion, because those who would make these objections would say that religion can't be tested. There's no empirical test that you can provide to show that God or gods exist. And so, therefore, it's nothing that could go hand in hand with science.
Yes. So we want to give a definition of religion. And I think a religion is an account of existence that includes a sacred realm. There's much more to it. But what distinguishes a religious worldview from a non-religious worldview is that a religious worldview has the idea of the supernatural or the sacred. So for monotheism, you stipulate that there is a creator and designer of the universe who is involved in the universe. So the sacred realm is supernatural and personal, whether we're talking about Judaism, Christianity, or Islam. And of course, there are differences among those worldviews. But you also have religions that don't have a personal supernatural realm as part of their belief system. That would include most forms of Hinduism and Buddhism. So what makes a worldview religious is some non-natural state or some non-natural realm, whether that's God, the Trinity, Allah, or in the impersonal realm, that could be Nirvana of Buddhism or Moksha of Hinduism. So the broad division with religion is the monotheistic religions versus the non-monotheistic religions. And the non-monotheistic religions may simply have a sacred realm called Nirvana, and not much can be said really positively about Nirvana. Or the non-theistic religion could be pantheistic, such as non-dualistic Hinduism. Pantheism is the idea that everything is divine. And by that, we don't mean a personal being, but some kind of impersonal abstract principle or force or something like that. So when you start to relate religion and science, as I mentioned earlier, the best science does refute religious worldviews that deny the origin of the universe, but the best science does help confirm at least elements of the monotheistic worldview, where it claims that there is a creation and design of the universe. So some of the claims of religion can be verified or falsified by scientific investigation and scientific conclusions. But since we've said that science is not the only way to have knowledge, the only way to have justified true beliefs, we don't want to limit knowledge to science. So with the monotheistic religions, we have the evidence from history. So the Hebrew Bible claims that God revealed himself to Abraham and to the prophets and made a covenant with Israel and so on. Christianity, of course, claims that Jesus is the ultimate fulfillment of the Hebrew Bible, that he was a human being who was also God incarnate, who cast out demons and healed the sick and raised the dead, and himself was crucified, buried, and rose again from the dead, and he ascended to heaven. Those are all historical claims. So you don't investigate an historical claim through a scientific method. You use what's called historiography. And then after Christianity, of course, comes Islam. And Islam makes some historical claims, but the problem, one of the problems with Islam, is that it claims things that are against well-established history, such as that Jesus died on the cross or that Jesus claimed to be divine. So they're still historical claims, but they're not rooted in the best historical sources, which, of course, would be the books of the New Testament. So there are many different religions. I think that what unites all religions and differentiates religion from a non-religion religious worldview is a belief in the sacred realm. And that sacred realm could be personal or impersonal. And the worldviews that claim there is a personal creator, the monotheistic religions, appeal very significantly to history, to ground their claim that God has spoken. And my take, and I developed this also in my book, World Religion in Seven Sentences, is that Judaism is very well rooted in history, and it points to Jesus as the Messiah. And that, of course, is based on historical claims of the New Testament, the Gospels and the rest of the New Testament. But then Islam comes along, and while it claims that God created the world, so there's scientific evidence for that, which also helps support Judaism and Christianity, it makes some other historical claims that are just palpably false.
So, is there any scientific evidence for religion? Can you apply any scientific methods to prove that religion and its claims, you know, religions exist, but the claims of religions are true?
Right. Religions all make truth claims about issues such as the ultimate reality, the human condition, the human problem, the way of salvation, ethics, the afterlife. So they are worldviews comprised of truth claims about the things really that matter most. And there are elements of monotheistic that are well established or well verified by historical evidence. Now, I've talked a little bit about the evidence for the Big Bang, and I go into a lot of detail on that in my book, Christian Apologetics. But Another one I want to mention, another major scientific theory, is what's called the fine-tuning argument. And about in the last 50 years or so, scientists have discovered a host of factors about the cosmos relating to natural laws and proportions and so on, things like the cosmological constant, that are all needed for life anywhere in the universe. And as of now, we only know of life being on Earth. So you have all these factors, there are dozens and dozens of them, and they keep finding more of them, that are all antecedently improbable. They don't have to be what they are. They're contingent facts about the universe. But they all have to be lined up for there to be life on Earth, or life anywhere in the universe. Now, you only have a few options here. Either you can say, well, even though it's fantastically improbable, and the numbers that are given are just mind-boggling how improbable it is by chance alone, even though it's so improbable, well, here it is, we're the lucky universe. Well, that's a really poor explanation, because it's really not an explanation at all. It just says chance explains everything, but chance has no chance when you have the orders of magnitude that we're discussing here. Or you could say, well, we're not the only universe. Maybe there is an infinity of other universes, and we just happen to be the lucky universe. So if you throw the dice once, you only have a certain range of possibilities, but if you throw the dice a billion times, you have lots of other possibilities. Well, there are a lot of problems with that. One is, it's a real bloated kind of ontology. Instead of one universe, you're multiplying universes, and there's no empirical evidence that these universes exist. They're just created out of whole cloth. And the only reason why they're created out of whole cloth is that these thinkers don't want to grant the most straightforward and simple explanation, which is there is one universe fine-tuned for life by an infinite mind, namely God. So there's a very powerful argument for a mindful designer, given all these contingencies that are necessary for life. And I developed that at great length also in Christian apologetics. So on that, we have scientific evidence for a mind behind the universe. Now that lines up and helps verify Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. But that doesn't mean that they're all evidentially equal, or that science is the only avenue for evidence to confirm or refute religion. We also have the realm of history, and we also do the test of internal consistency. Do the claims of a religious worldview line up with each other? And there are more tests that we can apply.
So what would you say, you know, if someone says, if we can think about science and religion, that they're not conflicting, I mean, how far could science take us toward true religion?
Well, I think it can take us to a monotheistic worldview, that there is a creator and designer behind the universe who accounts for it, and that that creator and designer is personal as opposed to impersonal, and therefore has the power to create and has the knowledge requisite to create. So at that point, you say, well, if that God exists, has that God revealed himself in history? That's a good question. Now, some people just leave it at that. They say, we have theories that verify, or that have been verified, about the origin and the design of the universe. So we will stop there. And what you have is what you might call deism. There is a creator and a designer, but he created and wound up the universe and now really has nothing much to do with it, right? But the argument, let's say, from Big Bang cosmology and the fine-tuning argument will tell you that there is one personal God. And I say one because in explanations, you always opt for the simplest explanation that explains the most data. But those arguments don't tell you if the one God is, let's say, the Trinity of the Christian scriptures. But that doesn't mean we have no information or no way to evaluate that claim. In fact, we do. We look at the explanatory power of the idea of the Trinity, that God is a personal being and also an interpersonal being, that love is eternal in the three members of the Trinity, so we have a ultimate metaphysical root for love. It gives meaning and purpose to love, and then we have the evidence from history through Jesus Christ that, in fact, God is love, that God so loved the world, he sent his only Son, that whoever believes on him wouldn't perish, but have everlasting life. So I think the best science is a kind of entry point to the possibility of divine revelation. And as a Christian philosopher and apologist, I believe, and I have argued rigorously for decades, that Christianity gives the best account of existence, of the origin of the universe, the design of the universe, and also explains who we are and what the ultimate answer to the human condition is. I think it explains it far better than atheism, than pantheism, or a non-Christian monotheism such as Islam or Judaism. But the difference there is that Judaism leads towards Christ and the new covenant, whereas Islam actually denies the essentials of Christianity and Islam. So there's an asymmetry there.
In this podcast, you've talked several times about history. So, you know, a lot of people who hold to the view that science is the ultimate truth and religion is mythology, is there things that history tells us about God that would not fall into the category of God being a myth?
Right. Well, there are many myths in coming out of Greek culture, Roman culture. You find a lot of mythology even in some of the Hindu scriptures and so on. So it's a legitimate question to ask, if we read something in a religious text, whether it is mythical in the sense that it never really happened, it's just some kind of inspiring story or a set of symbols, or whether or not it in fact occurred in space-time actuality. Now, what you have in the New Testament is eyewitness testimony or people who consulted eyewitnesses about the life of Jesus Christ. And Peter says that we did not devise cleverly constructed myths, but we were eyewitnesses to the majesty of Christ. He says that in 2 Peter chapter 1. And you find that the Gospels, two of the Gospels, John and Matthew, were written by disciples of Jesus. They were eyewitnesses. Mark was a companion of Peter. We can put that together. And Luke was a companion of Paul. We see that in the book of Acts with these passages where the author talks about we. So Luke knew Paul, who was an apostle of Christ. And in Luke chapter 1:1-4 in the prologue, we see that Luke did very careful historical research on what he wrote about. So while religions can make claims about the supernatural, about the miraculous, not all these claims are equally substantiated. For example, you have some claims about miracles of the life of Buddha around his birth, but they only appear in history 400 or 500 years after Siddhartha Gautama existed. And they're not significant for the teachings of Buddhism. What's significant is the Dharma or the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism. So yes, we have claims of the supernatural from a variety of sources. And the good question to ask, the legitimate question, is, are these mythical, as in untrue, or are they factual? And when you do a a deep dive into the historical reliability of the New Testament, as my colleague Craig Blomberg has done, or Lydia McGrew has done. And you definitely need to interview Lydia if you haven't. She is so good on historical reliability of the New Testament. When you really look at it, you find that there's good evidence for what the New Testament claims. And if you have the background knowledge that we have strong evidence from science that there is a supernatural creator and designer, then that kind of being could work miracles. So then the question is, has that being worked miracles? And when you look at the evidence from, let's say, Buddhism, I don't see it. If you look at Islam, I don't see it. The Islamic claims, let's say that the Quran is supernaturally inspired, I don't see that as a good argument. But when you look at the New Testament, it's very different because you have several witnesses. They don't ultimately conflict with each other. You have extra biblical testimony about Jesus and the life of the church. So I think we've got very cogent evidence, not only that a supernatural being created and designed the world, but this being has intervened in history, in his covenant with the Jews, and then through the testimony of the prophets, the nation of Israel leading to Jesus as Messiah. And we learn about these things in the Bible. And the Bible is a very different religious book than any other religious book.
Well, I want to end up by asking you to answer one of our commenters on our YouTube channel. And this person very snarkily said, obviously, Christians know more about science than thousands of highly educated research biologists, geologists, paleontologists, and more recently, geneticists who have confirmed evolution by natural selection for over 150 years. And so that argument is given many times. It's like Christianity is just nothing that's knowable. And also, how can you refute all of these educated scientists who say that we have been evolved through Darwinian, you know, macroevolution, and therefore they're knowledgeable and they would know more than any religious text. And they have confirmed natural selection is the means by which we find ourselves here.
Right. Well, there's a lot to take apart there. One thing is that natural selection does explain some aspects of the biosphere. It explains limited speciation, I think, but it really runs into trouble when you try to explain everything on the basis of undirected natural causes, such as the bacterial flagellum, such as the information, the coding in the DNA and the RNA, and so on. But back to the issue of, well, all the scientists believe in Darwinism, and it's only religious cranks who don't. Well, you can go to the Discovery Institute, discovery.org, and you'll find a document signed by hundreds of PhDs in science that question Darwinian evolution. So you have bona fide scientists who have evidential reasons, logical reasons to question Darwinism as the best explanation for all of biology. But even beyond that, you don't determine truth by counting noses. There are arguments that we have to appeal to. And because Darwinism is such a powerful social force, often Darwinists will just shut down the debate and they won't engage the issues fairly. So what people need to do is not simply say, well, the consensus favors Darwinism and it's only a bunch of religious cranks and fanatics who oppose it. What you need to do is consider the evidence. And a good way to do this is to look at a video. And of course, I want you to read books as well, but there's a video online called The Case for a Creator, hosted by Lee Strobel. It was also made into a book. I think it came out in 2006. And Strobel interviews philosophers and scientists who believe that there is good evidence from cosmology and biology and physics for a creator. And that video does not quote the Bible as proof. Now, if what these experts say is right, then we have some corroboration, we have some verification of in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, right? But you're not basing that belief on the authority of the Bible. The idea is that nature witnesses to its creator. And when we have biblical revelation, we have an agreement between the claims of the Bible about the cosmos and the best founded, the best researched claims of science about the origin and nature of the universe. So there's a lot to try to tease out in that criticism, but I would sum up by saying you don't determine truth by counting noses. And there are bona fide scientists who question Darwinism. And in the end, you really need to go to the arguments, go to that video, The Case for a Creator, or I've got 50 pages about Darwinism and intelligent design in my book, Christian Apologetics, or go to Steve Meyer and his book, Return of the God Hypothesis. And Steve Meyer does tremendous work in this area, and he is out there in the public realm. He was on the Joe Rogan show. He was recently interviewed by, I can't remember the guy's name. He's a British journalist who is quite influential. So Steve is out there writing the books and also doing interview after interview with high-level media figures and really holding his own and making a powerful case.
Well, on a much lighter note than talking about religion and science, I have a rapid-fire question for Doug. Doug told us on the last episode he was on earlier this year that he has a change in what he's doing and is moving away from Colorado. So now that you're moving, Doug, my question to you is, what's the most challenging thing about moving?
Well, right now it's getting the house in shape such that the buyers will sign off on it. It's a challenge to get the house up to specs where people are happy enough that they will sign on the dotted line. But we're in process. I think it'll happen. Just a big challenge. I've only sold one house before this. My first wife, Becky, and I lived in our first home for 20 years, and we moved here about 12 years ago. So there are a lot of issues, a lot of details to attend to, but I'm sure the Lord will work this out for us.
Well, we will look forward to hearing an update the next time you're on the podcast. But in the meantime, thanks for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to episode 393 of the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Dr. Douglas Grotheis. He has written an online feature article for his Culture Critique column, and his article is called Refuting the View, Religion is a Myth, but Science is the Truth. And you can read it for free at our website, equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.